Hi there, my name is Ben Catania, and I'm a student of Master Parlors at Chang's Hapkido Academy in London. I've been studying Hapkido for a total of 8 years or so, and I think it's great that you're considering Hapkido and a martial art generally. I think Hapkido in particular is a very beautiful, but also very complete and very effective art. If you are considering studying, you might be asking yourself about the benefits of doing so. And I think there are a number of great things about Hapkido. It's a great way to stay in shape. The techniques are very effective. They're also very fun to learn. And I think what's also great is that anyone can study, whether or not you're an experienced martial artist, or if you've never done martial arts, you will get a ton of benefits either way. However, I think there are a number of benefits beyond what we learn in the classroom or the dojang, as we call it. One of the things I do outside of Hapkido is I host a podcast called All Things Risk. And in fact, my first episode was an interview with Master Parlor. And recently on my show, I spoke with Ms. Anna Glover, who is also a longtime student. She's a second dan or a second degree black belt. I'm a first dan. And in this episode, we got to talking about Hapkido and some of the benefits that we get out of it, particularly outside of the class in our professional context. Now, this is a part of a longer conversation, but here is an excerpt, and it will give you some insights into the ethos of the club, I think, and why we continue to study Hapkido after all these years. For a little while.
I dropped that reference
and we, Anna and I practice Hapkido, which is a Korean martial art. I just wanted to just talk a little bit about what you get out of practicing a martial art like that. And do you get any benefit in your professional life and or outside at all? I'm not. I don't know about you, but I'm not fending off muggers on my way to work every day or you know any day. Why do it? And I'm not training to become the next UFC champion either. I'd be curious to get your experiences and views on it.
Yeah. Actually, I have the National Theatre to thank for Hapkido. So. Our Sabunim's partner worked at the National. When I came out of Wales, I was lost for lots of reasons, but also because I wasn't being as physical as I had been. Mm-hmm. I was really, what do I do in London? I can't climb. Mm-hmm. Climbing's super expensive and the walls aren't that great. And I was just having a conversation one day and Joe said, well, would you like to try martial art?
Mm.
And I said, you know what? I'd love to do that. Mm. I've always wanted to do that. My parents were quite, they didn't really want me to do it when I was growing up. So the point is I found my way into Hapkido just because I was looking for something else. Mm-hmm. And I tried one lesson and loved
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I would stick with it. If you had said to me, I never really stuck with anything. I was happily moving around from thing to thing apart from theatre. But I found myself going to one or two lessons, one a lesson a week, two lessons a week, and then starting key class.
Mm-hmm.
And the time when you're in something, I guess you don't realize what it's given you, but when you look back you think, wow, I'm significantly different. So I do have a stressful job, and Hapkido gives me the tools to cope with that stress. And it's interesting, actually, we look at Hollywood to our examples of why people do martial arts. Gosh, wouldn't I love to be as brilliant as Jason Bourne and be able to pull off those moves and all that sort of thing, and hope that if the mugger happened I would cope like that. But of course I wouldn't. That's not what it's for. But there are other fights we have. Mm-hmm. There's the daily commute.
Sure.
There are the challenges that life throws at us. And Hapkido has given me the ability to fight those off. One way is to not fight.
Yeah.
One of the best stories that I love that Master Chang talks about is the man who draws a line in the sand on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to his students, how do you make that line shorter? And some people rub out a bit of it and some people cut it in half.
Yeah.
And then the master draws a longer line next to it.
Right.
And that really resonated with me. And I think it's about, instead of trying to defeat the other person, it's to kind of accept what's going on and make your own line longer. Mm. So that's what I try to bring in my my role. And I still get people who don't want to speak, talk about safety. They don't want the conversations. They don't possibly see what I'm trying to do. And if I get angry with them or get involved in that conversation, it's not going anywhere. So it's like, bring it back to yourself, you know, and draw your own line.
Yeah.
But also because on the Dojang, I face risk. In the Dojang, on the mat, you face risk. You're your own opponent. It's not risk. I mean, you and I've sparred and, you know, you're fantastic, but I'm not thinking, oh, I'm going to get a black eye if I don't defend myself. Yeah. It's actually, am I going to defeat myself?
Step out of the way, or are you going to think about what to make for dinner whilst you're sparring, or what are that problem at work or whatever? And if I suppose if you did that, that may not end very well.
Yeah, I mean, actually, your guest Martian, he spoke about being on the bike and not being able to think about anything.
Yes.
And, you know, when I'm doing Hapkido, I can't think about anything. I mean, sometimes it'll creep in, but that's what it also gives me, wonderful release of, here I am doing a thing I love and I don't have to think about anything
else. So many ways of achieving that state, but we're so often not in that state.
Yeah.
And we should be, you know, much more. I very much agree. It does that very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm running or riding my bike, it does that as well. But sometimes I find it takes a while to get into that zone.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a wonderful way of one of the things that I've taken away is that sort of mind body connection.
Yes.
That you know, I was always very sort of intellectual, and you can kind of separate those two, and I could just, you know, succeed by just being smart and you know. And it doesn't work like that. And you know, you have to, you know, the mind and the body work together. And when you're one of the things I've taken away is when I'm sitting around a room, whatever the context is, I can see people's emotional reactions much better, I think, than just, you know, we're talking about this proposal and does it make sense, and do the benefits exceed the costs and blah blah blah, and that's how we're going to make the decision. And there's so much more going on beyond that. There's, you know, there's politics, and there's this guy's afraid of the, you know, and you can, there's a lot of emotion, and you can kind of feel that almost physically.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that sort of just making sure that I'm not separating those two things, and the work that I do is a huge benefit. It's just a constant reminder of that, that, you know, and it's not just the body either. It's not, you can't just like physically overpower whatever obstacle, you know, you get. There's a harmony there, and you know, that, you know, there are many ways to get that, but it's so important to remain not only physically active, but just connected mentally with that, you know, that physical activity.